Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided by Voice Republic at http://voicerepublic.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Gosh, you are not going to believe what they are talking about on the Strong Stance.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to the Strong Stance. I'm your host, Eli Strong. It's good to be back. We have an amazing topic tonight that I am really excited about talking about, but even more than that, we've got some great guests that we are going to be talking to about what they kind of do in the D.C. area. Our topic tonight is going to be on trans services that are available through different area organizations in the Washington, D.C. area. And we've got folks from three or four different organizations that we're going to be talking to about their everyday services, direct services to the transgender community, and how they kind of affect the everyday lives of trans folks in the D.C. metro area. So, Anise, are you here with me?
I am here with you, Eli. You know I wouldn't let you do this by yourself. I've always got your back. Well, hello, everyone. And this is actually the last Strong Stance for 2013.
It is.
And, you know, we could not have done this without you, all our listeners, and to our amazing airtime sponsor, Kappa Omega Omicron, who has covered all of the air costs for all of the shows on Back to Us Radio Network so that I can focus on, you know, finding other hosts just like Eli and bringing you all quality programming that you look forward to 7 nights a week. So, again, thank you, Kappa Omega Omicron. Thank you, SWG Creations, for designing all of our logos. And thank you, Diva Blue Photography, for working on our pictures. And Eli, I'm going to turn it back over to you for the last show of 2013.
Much appreciated. Yeah, it's hard to believe that this is going to be the last Strong Stance for 2013, so let's make it a good one. So as I had mentioned before, we are going to be talking about D.C. trans services in the metro area that serve the District of Columbia, as well as Northern Virginia and Southern Maryland and that whole metro area. Now, when I'm talking about some of these organizations, I've focused this show, keep in mind, on just a few. You know, many people know that in some of the larger cities, there are a lot more services for the LGBTQ communities than there would be necessarily in smaller cities and things like that. But, you know, so there are a lot here that I'm not mentioning. So I don't want anybody to think that these are all of the services, but these are some of the ones that I really wanted to highlight. The other thing that I want to highlight about these organizations is that these are more direct services organizations in one way or another, unlike some of the other volunteer support groups that we've talked about before, like the D.C. Area Transmasculine Society or DCATS. That's more of a volunteer-run, you know, social and support group, whereas the other services that we're going to talk about give kind of different services to folks, and some of them may be volunteer, some of them may be funded in other ways, and I'm going to let some folks come on and talk about those things and kind of how it happens and what are all the nitty-gritty ways that they help us out in an everyday kind of light. And in order to do that, we have got some amazing people that are going to be telling us about their organizations. These are very talented folks, and I want to start first with Trans Law here in D.C. These are the Trans Legal Advocates of Washington. And our guest for Trans Law is Lisa Mote, who is a steering committee member of Trans Law, and if I'm not mistaken, one of the founders of the group. So let's find out about what Trans Law does and all the ways that they you know, enrich the trans community in D.C. So, Lisa Moté, are you on?
I sure am. I'm thrilled to be here tonight.
Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And, you know, Lisa, you and I have worked together in a couple of different, you know, manners. And trans law has always been something that I've just absolutely, you know, loved the idea and the concept, being someone who could have definitely used its services before it existed. And so, first of all, I'd just love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about what trans law is and what it does.
Sure. So Trans Legal Advocates of Washington started about 2 years ago when a number of attorneys and law students got together and decided that it was past time that there was a better way for trans people in D.C. to get free legal advice on how to change their name and get the court-ordered name change and get gender changes on records of all kinds, IDs and records of all kinds. So about 2 years ago, a bunch of us got together. There's about 15 of us on the steering committee of trans law. And some of us are lawyers, some of us are law students, and some of us are not any of those. And we have kind of like a dual mission. One is to, the first thing is to make sure that trans people are getting the legal services that they need, as much as we can fill those gaps. And the second thing is to try to train legal professionals more widely on how to serve trans people for whatever legal services, you know, mechanisms there are. So let me talk about the second part first.
Yeah, that's really interesting. The second part was something that I was not even aware that trans law was doing. So do you have, like, a group of partners that you're currently working with? Or, like, how does one go about, if you are a legal counsel or you are a lawyer in the D.C. area, how does one go about getting involved with trans law and some of the things that you guys are doing?
Well, so what we're doing with the legal services community is going from organization to organization and training attorneys on basic trans competence, you know, basic respectful treatment, as well as providing a description of what are the typical legal issues that a trans client might have. So that attorneys who are dealing with a family law issue or an employment law issue or a tax issue or a criminal law issue, that they're better prepared to, first of all, respect the trans client's identity, regardless of whether or not the person has been able to update their name legally or gender marker legally, and as well as understand what other additional hurdles a transgender client might be facing, you know, regardless of why the attorney or, you know, law student is meeting with them. So, for example, we were invited by the George Washington Law School to train all of their law students who are doing legal clinics. We're going to be doing in January with the D.C. Bar Association, we're doing a presentation on transgender employment issues. We've done some training with Bread for the City, which is a major legal service provider. And we've done lots of other organizations. We're going to continue to go around the city and try to train as many legal professionals as possible so that when a trans person goes to seek advice, legal advice, that they're more likely to meet with an attorney who knows what they're doing.
So is that something that, is there anywhere either on your website or in another place where trans law has kind of, not archived, but do you have some place where someone could go? So if I needed legal services, I could go somewhere and see these are the different legal professionals or organizations that have been trained by your organization so that I know before I walk in that these people should be competent in the different ways in which, you know, the legal system might affect a trans person. Is that something that you guys track?
Right. So our website is translawdc.org, and there is a lot of information on there, including our how to get in contact with us, which is basically translawdc@gmail.com. And that's how to get training if one's interested in it. We don't currently list all the organizations that we've trained, but that's a really good idea, and I'll bring that back to the steering committee to see if we can put that information up on our website.
Yeah, I just know that oftentimes, like, you know, if you're someone who, look, I have to go through the legal services that I have available to me, I don't have the luxury of picking and choosing, then, you know, I can see where it's like, oh, I don't know how helpful that is. But if it's something like I have a choice as to what legal, you know, counsel I'm going to seek out, you know, one of the things, same thing when I go for medical treatments, right? I try to find someone that I know has some kind of competency. So that was the only reason,
right,
I was asking, was if it was something that, like, you kind of, almost like you're giving your stamp of approval to these folks, they've been through our training and that kind of thing. But that's
sure,
very interesting.
Yeah, well, and yeah, it is. That's a really good idea, and then I'll definitely take that back to the rest of the steering committee.
So
we
didn't
want to talk about.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about our major project, which is,
yes,
then to work with Whitman Walker Health Legal Services Program on the free legal clinic for name and gender changes. We've been,
yes,
doing this,
please,
for basically a year and a half. We've served 200 people who have come through the doors of the clinic. What it is an evening about once a month. And we have attorneys who meet one-on-one with trans folks and, you know, whoever they bring with them to explain and help a person through the process of getting a legal name change or getting gender updated on any type of record, whether it's driver's license, social security, passport, commercial driver's licenses, birth certificates, et cetera. So it's a really amazing experience because it can be so confusing about which documents need to be updated first and how to do them, and then a lot of folks are really nervous going into court and
right,
whether or not they have the right documentation for the name change part of it. So it is really helpful, and the attorneys explain what makes sense to do which documents in which order and what documents you need to bring in. And even now we even have someone who will go to court with you for the name change process, if a person is interested in that. So that's kind of the gist of the clinic. But what I think people don't understand is that TransLaw, the steering committee, we raise money actually to pay for people's court fees and newspaper publication fees and fees to get a new driver's license or fees to get a copy of your birth certificate, which you usually need a copy of your birth certificate to get a name change. So TransLaw does fundraisers so that people who come into the clinic and, you know, self-identify and say that they don't really have the funds to do these things, we pay
right
for it.
That's amazing. So
get your stuff paid for.
Right, yeah. So if I'm someone who well, obviously, if I'm someone who can't afford these kind of things, I can go to the website. But if I'm someone who wants to donate to that cause or wants to know more about your fundraisers, is that also on your website, the information about what fundraisers that you do or ways to donate to your organization?
Absolutely. We've got a big donate on our donate button on our website. And right now we are planning our next fundraiser. It'll be our second in-person, you know, live fundraiser. That'll be in March. That'll be our second anniversary.
Oh, wonderful. So basically,
I don't have the
name change
yet,
clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Say again.
Oh, I was saying that it's going to be in March, and we don't have
okay
our exact date yet.
Okay, great. Well, as soon as you have that information, if you pass it along to me, I'll definitely post it onto our Facebook group and get it out to our listeners as well, so that folks in the D.C. area, if they want to take part in that, that they'll be able to do that.
Great.
But, I love the name change clinic. I think it's great that there's basically something out there that, you know, kind of you can walk in and say, I have no idea where to start. Can you please walk me through this and kind of handhold and tell me what the fees are and, you know, if I need some help financially in paying for those fees. And so that's amazing. Can you tell our listeners one more time where and when those name change clinics are?
Sure. The next two clinics are, one's in January, one's in February. So it's Tuesday, January 14, and then
okay
Tuesday, February 11. And it's hosted at the Whitman Walker Health Legal Services Program office, which is at the Elizabeth Taylor Medical Center, which many people are familiar with, but it's at 1701 14th Street Northwest. And that information is available at translawdc.org, and we always post the dates for the upcoming clinics there. And we also we provide pizza as well, because we know people often don't have, you know, money for dinner.
Yeah. No, that's great. I wasn't aware of the pizza availability as well. Pizza always can get folks in the door.
Sure.
But I think that it's amazing what TransLaw is doing. I know from having to go through this process in the D.C. area about, 5.5 years or so ago, it is a very arduous process, and it can be a lot of red tape, and it can feel kind of like you're kind of out there alone. And so it's amazing to have a group that is constantly working to bring services like this to the community and make things just a shade easier, if that's possible when we're talking about bureaucracy and changing legal documents. So, Lisa, I want to thank you again so much for coming onto the show. Is there any last minute kind of plugs that you'd like to give about TransLaw, or information that you'd like for people to know?
Well, I just want to say that TransLaw is an all-volunteer organization, and the reason that the free legal name and gender change clinic has been working so well is because of our partnership with Whitman Walker Health. They really do such a good job of staffing it and making, they have a program, and it's so important that the entire community continues to support Whitman Walker Health, including the legal services program, because TransLaw wouldn't have been able to do this with ourselves, by ourselves. So we're just very thankful for their work.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. Well, thank you so much, Lisa. I really appreciate you taking the time to brief our listeners on this great service. And, I just thank you so much for the work that you're doing for the trans community, particularly in the D.C. area with this name change clinic and the rest of what TransLaw does.
Thank you.
So, as Lisa mentioned, one of the things that really brings, kind of TransLaw along and allows it to really function is Whitman Walker Health. And, mentioning Whitman Walker Health, I got to tell you that Whitman Walker is, for a very great number of people in the Washington, D.C. area, regardless of sexual orientation and gender identity, is just an amazing place for a lot of different services. But they do have a good number of trans services as well. And so let's just go ahead and go right to our next organization, which is Whitman Walker Health, and we are very honored to have Thomas Coughlin on the line. He is the Transgender Care Advocate for Whitman Walker Health, and he'll be telling us about some of the services that they offer to the trans community specifically, as well as, just other wonderful tidbits about Whitman Walker. So welcome, Thomas. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me, Yon.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. Thomas, you've done so many different things in the trans community, and one of the things that I often speak of throughout the community when folks ask tons of different questions about medical or behavioral or pharmacy or any other kinds of services is you just need to start at Whitman Walker. There's a guy there named Thomas. Go talk to him. So if you wouldn't mind just kind of giving us, our listeners, an overview of what Whitman Walker Health can provide to the trans community and what other things that either your position entails or the clinic as a whole. There are just a lot of people that are always eager to learn more about Whitman Walker.
Well, sure. So Whitman Walker Health, we have two locations. One is in Northwest D.C. Lisa mentioned it at 1701 14th Street. The other one's in Southeast D.C., the Max Robinson Center in Southeast D.C. And we offer a whole host of services. As you mentioned, trans-specific services, but we have a breadth of services to provide for the entire metro D.C. area, primary medical care, HIV-related care. Of course, we have a focus on HIV and LGBTQ health care. We have a pharmacy, full-service pharmacy. We provide behavioral health care, dental care. We have HIV, STI testing and counseling, addiction. Lisa, of course, mentioned our legal services. So we have a lot of services to offer, and we try to do that in the highest quality way that we can. Our providers are educated and experienced working with the transgender community, and we try to treat people with respect that they deserve and compassion as patients and clients of the clinic.
Yeah, that's, you know, I love a lot of the services that Whitman Walker provides, and I think that a lot of people that have at least heard of Whitman Walker Health are at least, you know, overarchingly aware of the medical type of services and some of the pharmacy services. Are there groups, like are there counseling groups, or I know I'm sure that there's one-on-one counseling, but are there also groups for trans folks to, you know, like support groups and things like that, whether led or volunteer led or anything like that?
Yeah, there certainly are. In our behavioral health department, we have two groups that are trans specific. So what I mean by that is the participants in the group identify as transgender, gender variant, gender queer. One of the groups is called Trans Spectrum. It's led by one of our clinicians, Jane Gould. Generally, the demographic for that group is younger folks, 18 to 25. Some folks are just exploring gender, kind of in a questioning phase, if you will.
Right.
And the other group that I lead is called Trans Live. Although we do have folks, age range, I would say 25 to, I've had folks in their 60s. These folks, some of them too, may be exploring gender, deciding if they want to pursue medical intervention or not, or just getting support, camaraderie, connection with other folks in the community.
That's amazing. Well, I know that you have a number of medical professionals, and am I correct in saying that unlike some other folks, or not folks, but unlike some other places in other cities where they might have one, maybe two medical staff that are familiar with trans issues and educating trans issues, am I correct in saying that a good portion of the doctors and the physician's assistants that work at Whitman Walker are familiar with trans health and the transition process? Is that correct?
Yeah, all of our providers see trans folks for trans-related care.
Okay.
That's
what I thought. You know, I know that there are a couple of people that, you know, people come up to, we get questions all the time, folks that are in the D.C. area that know of different doctors of, you know, what doctor do you use or what doctor can I go see at this, that, or the other clinic? But it's good to know that really anyone that you would go see at Whitman Walker Health is adequately, you know, trained in order to handle trans health and transition as a whole. My question for you,
I mean, we do have providers that have been there longer, have more experience working with clients, and so maybe have more experience with maybe more complicated cases or folks that might need a little bit extra. Maybe they have medical histories that might need a little bit more attention. But everybody is definitely experienced in working with the trans community. And you know, I think a client or a patient of Whitman Walker Health or anywhere should be able to choose, you know, and sometimes you want to try a couple of different providers, maybe, you know, until you find one that you really connect with.
Right.
So we do offer that choice.
Okay, great. So one question that I have for you, because I know that some of our listeners in the D.C. area, much like that, are interested in things that TransLaw does based on their income, however small that may be, is what type does Whitman Walker accept insurance? Is there any kind of fee reduction based on income? Like what does that kind of look like from Whitman Walker's perspective?
Yes, we do accept insurance. Now, we have a pretty extensive website, which is really helpful for folks who want to kind of check out what insurance we take and what insurance we don't have for those folks who do have insurance. We have insurances listed there. We also have a public benefits department that can help people who are uninsured, who are, you know, asking questions, who need help maybe with the new insurance options or help understanding, you know, what they're entitled to. they can get in touch with our public benefits department. Contact information is on our website as well, and they can talk one-on-one with one of our public benefits personnel about what is available to them and how they can access care.
Great. So I think that one of the big questions that I've always wanted to know from you is if you could kind of sum up in, you know, a couple of sentences what your position, because, you know, I think that you're one of the few people I've ever seen in a clinic that has a title like transgender care advocate. If you could sum up in a couple of sentences what your position really does for, you know, trans folks that come into the clinic, what would that be?
Okay. So I'm part of the behavioral health team. So I'm a psychotherapist. So part of my job there is to see clients. I see clients individually, and I run, as I said before, the trans lives group. So my other role is as a transgender care advocate. And for that, in that role, what I do is I basically welcome new trans folks into the clinic. So they register as a new patient, then they have an intake appointment with me. And in that appointment, we go over you know, their client information and their background, find out what their goals are, what they're looking for, and I act as a sort of concierge for the clinic, letting them know about all the services that we provide so that they can make informed choices as to what they want to, you know, what they want to take from the buffet, if you will. I also provide, as a care advocate, I also provide resources outside of the clinic because, you know, we're not the only place in town, and people shouldn't think that the only place to go is Whitman Walker. I do have, you know, resource lists, peer support groups, you know, peer-led groups. I have lists of electrolysis providers. I have lists of surgeons, you know, nationwide. I have, you know, lists of publications that are helpful. And I also, you know, have some supportive information for family members. I have people coming in with their parents or people coming in with their partners. I have lists of outside providers, medical providers, and lists of outside therapists as well.
That's great. Well, you know, I know that Whitman Walker does partner with a lot of organizations, whether it be, you know, in the work that you guys do with Trans Law, as well as I know that you provide meeting spaces to area volunteer-run groups and things like that. And so the breadth and wealth of information and resources that comes out of just the services provided to transgender clients is mind-boggling when you think about the fact that it's offered to the rest of the community in the D.C. metro area, regardless of gender identity and sexual orientation. It's just absolutely amazing. I just want to obviously thank you and your clinic and group for everything that y'all do. I've known so many people that have had very wonderful and positive experiences in all facets of the services that y'all had. So I want to thank you for coming on the air and telling our listeners about, you know, all the services that are available. It's great to have a place where folks have told me I can go there and not feel like I have to kind of be even more vulnerable in front of a doctor than I need to be. So thank you very much for all that y'all do and for coming on the air, taking the time to come out today and talk to us about everything that Whitman Walker does.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Well, thank you, Thomas. And so the next organization that I really want to talk about is one that also, similarly to Whitman Walker Health, has a very wide range of services that they provide, as well as a wide range of audience for those services. This is an organization that I personally have been a volunteer in the past for, and it also works with organizations that I work with as well. And that organization is known as HIPS, which is an acronym for Helping Individual Prostitutes Survive. It's an amazing organization, and we are very honored to have the executive director, Cindy Clay, with us tonight to talk about all the different things that HIPS provides. Cindy, if you are in the D.C. area, you may have seen her on the cover of Metro Weekly a while back. She is what most people know as the white girl with the blue dreads. So, Cindy, are you on with us?
Hi, Eli. Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for that introduction.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm very good, very good. I do have to tell you, though, that article was very well, that profile was very well done. It was such a great kind of interview and great picture as well. So, again, congratulations on that in Metro Weekly.
Thank you. They were very kind to the interview. I was really nervous. So,
yeah.
I'd have got the word out.
So, it was actually really hilarious because I was just walking by a newspaper bank, you know, one of their little banks of magazines one day and saw it. And I was like, wait a minute, and just kind of grabbed it. But, you know, there's a couple of different things that I would love to hear from you on. I'd love to first start with if you can talk about kind of what HIPS provides to folks in the D.C. area, what kind of services they provide, and whether it's in the office, outside the office, and things like that, because it is kind of a wealth of, not necessarily all over the place, but there are a lot of different ways in which you interact with the community.
Right, yeah. Actually, for just so everyone knows, HIPS has been working here in the D.C. community for the past 20 years. And we're actually celebrating our 20th anniversary in 2013.
Amazing.
Actually, two things happened a lot of things happened, but two main things happened for us this year is, one, we revised our mission statement as part of a expansion that we were doing. And so we work in D.C. to promote the health rights and dignity of individuals and their communities that are impacted by sexual exchange. So that's, you know, formal and informal sex work, you know,
mm-hmm.
and or drug use. And we do that by
okay.
helping people, you know, challenge barriers and issues that they have to their health, to their safety, and to their prosperity. And so it's kind of a new direction that we've been going in for a while, but we made it really formal. And also as part of our work, we actually dropped the explanation of the acronym. So we're just HIPS now. We call ourselves like, formally known as Helping Individual Prostitutes Survive.
Mm-hmm.
And this has all happened in the past couple months. And mainly because, and I think this is really important when we're talking about our work with the trans community, is I think that in many ways, like our previous primary focus and very explicit focus on prostitution or sex work, you know, would put barriers up for certain people coming in and accessing our services because they didn't want to necessarily have everyone know that they were doing sex work, or they needed services that we provided, but they didn't engage in sex work.
Right.
And so we felt like, you know, changing the mission and dropping the explanation for the acronym helped us be a lot more accessible to the community that we were already serving. And so the way that we try to achieve that change in the community is we provide a bunch of different services, both at our drop-in center that's in Brentwood, but also on the streets during the day. We're out 4 days a week providing mobile services out into the community. And also during evening outreach, which is a mobile unit that goes out on the streets, primarily serving people who are doing sex work on the streets, but also drug users and doing safer sex and risk reduction and syringe access delivery and things like that. So the goal of that is to just be as accessible as possible and to be kind of like a, you know, a one-stop shop for the basic services that people in a city need to stay safe. And to take care of themselves and to live a fulfilled life, basically. Some of the
yeah.
new stuff that we're doing, primarily we're working with trans that are trans people that are working in either, you know, formal or informal sex work, or anyone
okay.
who uses drugs. Whether that be something like alcohol or illicit drugs and also hormone injectors.
Okay.
And go ahead.
It's the things that you're talking about. I'm so glad that we were able to get you right after all of these things changed because I had heard kind of rumblings about some of this stuff happening. And I think that it's amazing that, you know, old mission, new mission, they're both amazing. I think that it's great that your organization is kind of growing with the growing target of the organization. And I find that very interesting that, you know, that like many organizations, I mean, it's very similar to organizations like NARAL that are now just known as NARAL when they used to be known as the National Abortion Rights Action League and things like that. So I'm glad that we got a chance to talk to you right after you made those changes so that we can kind of let folks know what's kind of coming down the pipe for, you know, the now and the soon to be for HIPS.
Yeah, thanks. And I think that this might be the first time that we've been able to talk about that super publicly. So thanks for giving us the platform to get the word out.
Yeah,
this is our
absolutely
radio announcement.
Yeah. So you were talking about some of the direct services, and you mentioned being out on the street several days a week. So what other, if you want to continue talking about the services that you either provide either outside the office as well as some of the individual services or group services that you provide inside the office.
Sure. Well, the other really exciting thing that's happening right now is HIPS is actually officially opening a wellness center at our Brentwood office that is really exciting. And we're going to be able to provide both education and direct services that is, you know, primarily centered around helping trans people reduce their HIV risk, but also, like, has the full range of services that HIPS provide. And that includes, like, a safe space at our drop-in center. We're working with Casa Ruby to have a collaborative second site that's going to have services happening at Casa Ruby, which is up in the Petworth neighborhood. And the services that are going to be part of the Wellness Center include trans-specific syringe access and injection education. We're going to have trans-specific support and educational groups. General health and wellness education, so that includes things like, you know, like nutrition counseling and mental health counseling, different, you know, topics of health that might be of interest to people. And then we'll have counseling, both drop-in and regular appointments that are available. We have a workforce development program, which is our health educators program, where trans people who want to get experience or who potentially haven't, are interested in working in the health field can come in and receive training and get information about, you know, entering public health work. There's free wireless available at the Wellness Center so people can come in and have a cup of coffee and hang out and, you know, watch some great videos and use our wireless if they'd like to. We have a computer there for people who don't have computers who want to access the Internet to look up health information, get on Facebook, look for jobs, things like that. Free condoms and other materials. And while we're not as fancy as Trans Law Center, we do have snacks and coffee all day, kind of a place to hang out. And then for people who are, like, homeless or transitionally housed, in addition to all those services that are available to them, we have a clothing closet where people can get clean clothing, laundry services. And then for everybody, we have drug use counseling services and drug treatment referrals. So it's a nice expansion of services that we've always, you know, always provided at the drop-in on a shoestring budget.
Right.
But this allows us to make them just much more holistic and much more, you know, available to the community.
Yeah, and then it's so amazing all the different things that y'all provide. One thing that I would love for you to touch on, if only momentarily, is I know that you mentioned quite a few things, so if I miss this, call me on it. But if you could just briefly at least, or as detailed as you'd like to, go into the hotline that HIPS has a 24-hour hotline, correct?
Yeah, I was actually saving that till the end because we also have a 24-hour hotline that's available 24 hours a day to anyone in the D.C. area and sometimes beyond who's either engaged in or affected by drug use or sex work. And a really exciting thing is that we're expanding that hotline to be available for anyone in the D.C. area, any D.C. residents who are part of the LGBT community who have experienced violence.
Really?
And yeah, it's a collaboration that we're doing with the D.C. Center. And so these services have been available to sex workers, drug users, and trans people in D.C. Since 1993 when HIPS was formed.
Right.
And so basically what that is 4 hours a day, there's a counselor that people can talk to. They're peer counselors. They're not trained therapists. But what we can do is we can help people work through issues that they might not be able to talk to anybody else in their life about.
Right.
And if someone's been a victim of violence or is in a domestic violence relationship or an intimate partner is abusing them, if they're, you know, if potentially if they're being trafficked or they're, you know, in an abusive relationship with someone who's coercing them to do sex work, our counselors can be available to help them talk through and make plans around those issues. And then in certain situations, when we have the resources, someone can actually help, you know, help them through that process. So if that's like, if you've been a victim of violence and you need you would like an advocate to go with you to the hospital. In many cases, we rely on a crisis team of volunteers who can go with you. We can also sit with you while you talk to law enforcement if you feel like you need an advocate. And we'll help you address like dealing with the court system, accessing victims compensation, and kind of dealing with, you know, working through the process of that. So, again, like these services have been available to the trans community, you know, since 1993. Again, we receive very, very, very little funding for this project. We run the whole hotline on about $6,000 a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. we used to run it on, you know, we used to run these services on about, you know, $60,000, and now we run it on $6,000.
Yeah.
but, it, you know, we're excited with this new collaboration with the D.C. Center that we're going to be able to expand it to all members of the LGBT community and not just potentially people who are engaged in sex work or drug use. And that should launch in hopefully by February. We're going to launch that for reals.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, please keep me posted on that and I'll be able to spread that. But so let me ask you to do me a favor. Can you explode a myth for me?
Okay.
I am not afraid to say I'm very proud to be not only a former volunteer of HIPS, but also a user of the needle exchange services through HIPS. And one of the things that I hear from a lot of folks, and I actually thought it myself, was at first I did not want to take part in the needle exchange program because I was afraid that because I could afford needles that I was taking those services away from someone else that actually needed them more than I did. And someone told me at some point that that was incorrect, that it actually helped the program. So can you kind of discuss that myth of stealing or using up services when you don't need them or that someone else that needs them more than you? Is that like kind of what does someone's participation in it, does it do anything positive or negative for the program within your walls?
So, I mean, at HIPS, we want to make sure that these services are really accessible for the community. And in some
right.
ways, if you think that only a certain type of person should access a syringe exchange, then, you know, I think that that only perpetuates a stereotype and a stigma against people who engage in, you know, who are accessing and who participate in a syringe exchange program or a syringe access
right.
program. And so in many ways, the trans community was one of our biggest allies when we were starting our program because, you know, they were, you know, really interested and helped us, like, make sure that our disposal rate numbers were up because, you know, people had been stockpiling syringes for so long because they didn't know of any safe way to dispose them.
Yes.
Well, it's true. You know, people were like, I have,
yeah.
you know, people were getting tons of syringes in their, you know, in their closets, which in some ways, it's very, very dangerous.
Right.
You know, and also I think that there's a lot of education that's available. You know, people don't necessarily know about the risks of reusing needles and reusing needles, even if you're reusing them only with yourself.
Right.
And so to provide that's education everybody needs, especially anyone who hasn't grown up potentially injecting, which is quite frankly most of us. you know?
Right.
And so we're happy for anyone in the city who, you know, again, is injecting hormones, is injecting illegal drugs, or injecting steroids, you know, can come in and participate in the program. We think it's, you know, it's really important, and we love to see everybody.
Yeah, it's great. And I got to tell you that we, you know, that's one of the partnerships that, you know, many of our listeners know that I am one of the facilitators for the D.C. Area Transmasculine Society. And one of the partnerships that we hold dear is our one with HIPS. And we provide needle exchange at every one of our meetings because we know some people that even either they need needles or even if they don't, like you've said, they'll come to us with jugs full of used syringes because they had nowhere else to put them. So I love that HIPS has these services and provides them. So I will say that as someone who, of all the places that I've volunteered for, I think that I've met the most amazing people and had the most fun and learned the most volunteering for HIPS. So what can you tell our listeners if they want to get involved with an organization like HIPS or want to get involved with HIPS? What kind of process or who do they need to contact to go through the kind of volunteer training or informational gathering that they would need in order to be kind of fully functional as a HIPS volunteer?
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we would not do hardly any of the work that we do without volunteers. You know, we work with between 40 and 70 volunteers at any given time. Who are really the backbone of our program. We have volunteer orientations. We hold them 4 times a year. Our next one is actually going to be coming up late January, early February. You can sign up to get information about that on our website, which is www.hips.org. And you fill out the app, like you basically sign up on our website and we'll send you an application that you can fill out, which gives us lets us know a little bit about you, gives us your contact information. And then we ask that everybody kind of attends the orientation. We have those on Saturdays or Sundays. They're 4 to 5 hours, and that just gives us an opportunity to sit down and talk to everybody about this is HIPS philosophy, what HIPS is. This is what harm reduction is. This is, you know, some information about sex work in our city. Gives us a chance to get to know you a little bit better, gives you a chance to get to know HIPS a little bit better. And then we do interviews with the – you get to interview with the outreach team, so you get to ask them questions – and other volunteers as well. You get to ask questions about what volunteering is like. You get to pick kind of like the volunteer position that you're most interested in. And then we have, unfortunately, a limited number of slots for each position. And we kind of try to put people where their skills and their interests lie. And then there's actually a 12 to 14 session training that happens after that so that you feel really comfortable and understand things like band safety, how to do syringe exchange, trans-specific health information, LGBT issues, violence issues. How to do counseling and listen, you know. So, our volunteers really walk out of their experience with HIPS, I think, knowing a lot more about how to provide a wide variety of services to, you know, to the community.
Yeah, and I got to tell any of our listeners that are in the D.C. area that are, you know, a lot of us are activists and we want to volunteer, and it's great to do volunteering that is involved in an office once in a while. And HIPS needs those kind of volunteers just like anybody else does. But if you are interested in doing, you know, some of, you know, more hands-on stuff, whether it be to go through all these kind of trainings and try to get one of those prize spots on the van or help out with some of the 24-hour, hotline and the drop-ins and things like that, I learned so much about not only myself but services in general. Going through these trainings, it was absolutely not only eye-opening but life-changing, and you meet some really great people doing it. And so I highly encourage anyone to get involved with that. Speaking of volunteers and other ways that folks can help HIPS, is the how often do you need like clothing for you? I heard you mention something about a closet for folks to kind of get changed and laundry services and things like that. How often are you actually looking for clothes to stock that closet? Is it rarely? Is it pretty frequently? Do you accept clothing donations?
We're on hold for clothing donations right now. We unfortunately had a leak that happened in our clothing closet and caused some structural damage that we're getting fixed. We're hoping that that's going to be fixed in the next 2 weeks. And so, and unfortunately that meant that all of the clothing that we had in our clothing closet actually got destroyed. So in January or February, we will be putting out a call for clothing donations, and we really need clothing of all shapes and sizes, all kinds of clothing. You know, people like casual clothing, people need business clothing for job interviews and court dates and things like that. So we will be putting out the call to that. You can join our Facebook page. It's where we do a lot of our information about volunteers, and you can also join our mailing list. We put out what is now every other month newsletter with pictures and fun tips and things that are happening at HIPS. They're actually really, really fun newsletters to get. I think, but I work there, but I still think they're fun. Everything that HIPS does is really fun, I think. But yeah, in January, February, we will be looking for clothes donations.
So is it true? I believe that I heard once upon a time that you started at HIPS as a volunteer. Is that true, Cindy? Oh, I think we may have just lost Cindy.
Her call. It looks like her call dropped, Eli.
Okay. Well, let me just go ahead and say that let's go ahead and wrap this up, since that was so great. There was so much information, Cindy. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on and talk with us about everything that HIPS provides. I want to take this time to thank all of our guests tonight. Thank you so much, Lisa from Trans Law, Trans Legal Advocates of Washington. Thank you so much, Thomas from Whitman Walker Health, and thank you so much to Cindy Clay, the Executive Director of HIPS. If you are interested in any of these organizations, we will be posting some stuff on our Facebook page so that you can get involved with them. At minimum, I will put up the links for the three of their websites, but they all three did mention their websites in the show. And I want to thank our listeners again for listening in. And, I want to take this time to just kind of reiterate that, you know, these were only a few of the many services that DC has for the trans community. You heard that Trans Law does a partnership with Whitman Walker Health. And one thing you may or may not know, based on things that I've said in previous shows, is that the organization that I work with, DCATS, not only has a partnership with HIPS, but also with Whitman Walker Health as well. So thank you so much for all of these groups for working together, and these partnerships just make our transgender community stronger. You heard Cindy talk about their partnership with the DC Center and with Casa Ruby. Again, those are two other organizations that we didn't get a chance to talk with tonight, but those are folks that are also providing services to the trans community. And it is my personal belief that the more that we kind of, you know, collaborate together, the stronger we are. And not to mention the fact that, you know, the more services, there's no place where it says that only one place can provide medical services, as Thomas said. Whitman Walker Health doesn't have to be the only place you go. And not only one place should provide any specific type of services. You know, the more we have, the stronger we are. The more collaboration we do, the stronger we are as a community. And so, again, I just want to say thank you not only to our guests for taking the time out to come and speak to us, but also just for doing the work that they do day in and day out for the trans, gender, queer, and all the rest of the LGBTQ community. It is amazing to be a part of it. It's amazing to see it happen. And so I just want to thank all of those people that do that. While I'm giving out thanks, I would also like to, since Anise mentioned that this was the final strong stance of 2013, I would like to thank all of our listeners for listening in to all of our episodes for this calendar year, and I want to thank all of our guests from this calendar year. I want to let folks know one little plug is that the nominations for the Trans 100 are now open. The Trans 100 is meant to be a collection of resources of trans people. It is a nationwide list. You can nominate anyone in the trans community that is openly trans for this list. The nominations will close, I believe it is January 15th at midnight Pacific time. And the website, if you'd like to nominate someone, is thetrans100.com/nominations. And you can nominate as many folks as you'd like. So please feel free to nominate the trans advocates, like some of these folks that you may have heard tonight, for the work that they do. The rules for those nominations are up on that site, and so you should be able to find whatever information you need. I want to wish everyone a happy holidays, a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year. Whatever holiday you choose to celebrate, I hope that it is a very happy one. I hope that you get to spend lots of time with those loved ones around you that make up your stronger community. I think it's very important to remember at this time, think back of all the wonderful things that have happened this year in your personal life, maybe your professional life, your family life, and just to remember to take care of each other and to take care of ourselves. And one final very big thanks to all of the Back to Us Radio Network listeners and everyone, including our very amazing, very talented executive producer, Anise. And so with that, I'm going to close the strong stance for 2013. Thank you all for listening and have a wonderful night.
Practical games.
You have been listening to a recording provided by Voice Republic at http://voicerepublic.com.